Hello, everyone. Good afternoon on this crisp Friday here in Uptown Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in to RadioLaurier.com. Right now, it's time for a little Gold and Bold, a little radio sports show action. My name's Ian. I'm joined by Bernavan,
one of the
sports volunteers. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you, Ian?
Good. I'm doing good. So this will be officially episode one of the sports show. Of course, there's episode zero. Wow. Last week, which was just me fooling around with the soundboard and different features and just riffing for 35 minutes. That's an experience. You can go listen to that. But live right now on this October 4th is episode one. So thank you, Bernavan, for coming in.
Yes, I'm happy to have it be here. You know, it's an honor. I know, you know, the Radio Laurier has a great prestige associated with it. And
you're
a wonderful host.
Oh,
so
cannot wait. I paid you to say that.
Oh.
All right. It's Friday. Any big Friday plans tonight?
Honestly, I'm just chilling, you know. I just got off of a lot of work for the week, Just gonna enjoy the weekend, relax, and you know, reading week coming soon. That's pretty much
it. Reading week midterm season is coming up. I'm not hyped about that. Like that. I'm not a huge midterm guy. I can't take tests well. I don't know about you, but tests, my brain just goes off for 2 hours and I know. You figure out all the answers after.
It's like, oh, come on, really? I figured out.
But someone who has a big Friday night planned is the men's hockey team tonight.
Mm.
Of course, they just finished their preseason. Of course, the Laurier Golden Hawks men's hockey team. They finished it not doing so hot. They're 0-5. And they failed to record more than a goal in every single one of those preseason games. Tonight, they can catch their home opener, first game of the regular season, and that fight for the OUA men's hockey playoff kicks off. Tonight, the Laurier Golden Hawks, the men's hockey team, taking on the men's hockey team of the Western Mustangs. Tonight, you can catch that at Waterloo Memorial Recreational Complex. Our very own Mateo Beckles will be helping out on the call down there.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, also pretty close to campus. It's a bit of a further walk. It's down Uptown Waterloo, Father David Bauer Street. Great arena there. So if you want to catch the men's hockey team in the first regular season game, that's tonight at Waterloo Memorial Recreational Complex, Sun Life Financial Arena, in that venue at 7 p.m. They're against the Western Mustangs, who are 4-1 in their preseason. They had a much stronger preseason than our boys in gold and purple. Of course, they faced each other actually in the preseason, the Mustangs and the Golden Hawks, where that was a 3-1 victory for the Western Mustangs. Women's hockey. Their home opener is next week. That's October 11th. They're doing a bit more hotter than the men's. They're 2-4 in this preseason. They have one more preseason game to go. That's tomorrow in Oshawa versus Ontario Tech. Again, the women's hockey home opener. October 11th, also at the Waterloo Memorial Recreational Complex. First, the Windsor Lancers. The next day, of course, October 12th, they're also at home. They're against Kate McKnight in the U of T Varsity Blues.
Mm-hmm.
Other campus sports in action. Tell me about the football team, Bernavan.
So the football team has absolutely been killing it. I mean, there's no other way to put it. We've seen what they've done. For example, like we know they're undefeated. And a particular game I covered, since I'm also part of the Cord, I also covered the game against Western, where the score was 43-28, with us winning and having the upper hand throughout the game. It was just an absolute masterclass in the end. We already know Taylor, our wonderful quarterback, just cooking it up. I think he had 3 touchdowns. He's been absolutely just playing amazing. And like just overall, from the very beginning of that game up until I'd say like maybe the beginning of the second half, it was just truly dominant. Then they kind of kept their foot a little bit off the pedal and they got a bit of points on the board. But overall, you know, they stayed consistent. Just the best thing about the way they've been playing, just from the game I observed then, was just the way they find passes. Like, they make great cuts to get open, and they just find great passes to set themselves up really well. So that's what I've noticed that they've done, like, phenomenally, and it's something that's been able, you know, to keep them over the top in every game they played. And especially against, you know, Western, because Western, their overall record against them is 17-42. Throughout their history. So Western's have been absolutely dominating.
Yeah.
But yet they got the upper hand. And Western actually ended up taking their first loss of their season. And the only loss so far up to this point, they've only lost one game and it was against us. So right now we're doing really well. And I really hope they keep this momentum because, you know, once we hit, you know, the playoffs, then it's going to become really important that they keep that momentum going.
Definitely. And speaking of momentum, of course, our you know, our flagship football program here, Laurier, has had a history of success, and they're continuing that so far in this young season. Of course, they're 5-0, and they find themselves number one nationally ranked. Not provincial, not AOA, U Sports, nationally ranked.
That is best in Canada.
Number one, best in Canada. Of course, running down that ranking of U Sports football. Number one, of course, shout out for Laurier Golden Hawks. Of course, who else would be number one?
Indeed.
Number two and three both come out of Quebec and Montreal and Laval. And then fourth nationally ranked was Western, which, of course, the Golden Hawks.
Heavy hitters.
And they beat by fair margin, too.
Fair margin, yeah.
Number five, the Windsor Lancers. Of course, have a good program down there. Number six, also hailing out of Quebec from Sherbrooke. That's Bishop's University. At seventh, U Sports nationally ranked in men's football. It's U Manitoba. Eighth is Queens. Ninth is University of British Columbia, UBC. And also tied in ninth is our rivals from half an hour down the road, the Guelph Griffins. Mm-hmm. So out of all of those universities and all those very impressive football teams, who is in first? Laurier. Of course. The men's, turning over to basketball, the men's and women's basketball seasons have yet to start. They're underway in their preseason, though. The men's home opener, November 1st. I think the women's first game is also November 1st, but I assume it's not a home opener unless they're playing half court each.
Mm-hmm.
The men's basketball team, of course, had some success last season. They're hoping to continue some of that success and make it further into the playoffs. The women's basketball team also has some shining stars on it. They've got some rooks on it that are looking real hot in the preseason. Mm-hmm. So they're hoping to get some regular season games under the belt as they turn the calendar over to November.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Honestly, the men's basketball team, I definitely expect a lot from them this season, because although their shortcomings were prevalent in the previous season, they have a phenomenal roster. And we know we got, you know, the superstar himself.
Of course.
Tay Donald.
Yep.
Absolutely coming back for that fourth year. And listen, he dominated last season. His averages of 20 points per game were phenomenal. He was dominant scoring throughout the whole season. We know he got honors as U Sports second team All-Canadian. He was also OUA first team All-Star. And he was also, the previous season before that, OUA second team All-Star. So he's just been continued dominance. And, you know, averaging 20 points is really hard, especially, you know, at the level that we're at, because everyone is playing, everyone's hungry. And, you know, there's a lot of mouths to feed on the team, too. You know, he's not the only one scoring. And that's the thing. I really hope he really steps up. And he also played during the offseason in the CEBL, actually.
Oh, wow.
So he had an opportunity to play some, you know, offseason basketball at a professional level. So hopefully, that gave him some vetted experience to bring into the team. And maybe he learned some philosophies. And we know that Coach Cerise, he's not going to be, with us. He actually is, with the G League team at the moment. So, big ups to him. He definitely deserves the opportunity. He was a wonderful coach. I had an opportunity to interview him last season during the last game of the season. And, like, he's just a well-spoken guy. You could tell he has a really strong philosophy with his game. Like, he makes sure that, like, he's playing the best people when they're hot. And I think that's the best thing you could do, utilizing your players when they're playing at their best. So, you know, not having him for the team will be a big blow, but I do think that they're going to be able to carry, you know, what empty space is going to be leaving behind, in the sense that they're going to play good, they're going to play cohesive, and I'm looking forward to that season for sure.
Well said. I want to bring that back to, like, that 20 points per game mark, and that is impressive. Especially, though, you don't see those numbers, especially hitting that 20 mark. You don't see that very often.
Exactly.
In this OUA, in the men's basketball league. Because, as you mentioned, there's so many mouths, there's so many opportunities, there's a lot of players.
Mm-hmm.
It's very competitive, especially, I don't know if you've seen, like, an OUA basketball or football or hockey games. But the OUA is, you know, university sports in Canada, especially Ontario, is some of the most competitive matches I've seen. And great shout out to the coach there, too. Coaching, I think, especially as, like, you know, spectators or fans, I think we underappreciate the role of the coach a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter the sport, I think coaches, you know, they're underrated. Everyone kind of tunes into the superstars or the, you know, the play on the field. I think the coach off the field and the strategies and the philosophies and the values they instill and the discipline.
exactly.
All those factors go into a great coach. I don't know if you've played sports before.
Yeah, I've definitely played my fair share of basketball.
So
for sure.
You have experience with the art of coaching.
Oh,
and
yeah,
being coached.
Definitely. Coaching is so important because, like, you know, you could have a player that has all the tools. You know, they could be, you know, very athletically gifted, tall. Like in my case, I was pretty tall, so I was able to play bigger positions. But it's really about, like, okay, as a coach, what can I do to maximize their potential, to get them where I want them to be, and also to use them properly? Because some players are used in the wrong way, especially in a positionless basketball era that we're in now. We see big guys always playing, you know, in the big positions, but sometimes, you know, they're versatile enough to play like a wing position or even a guard position, as we see even in like NBA, you know, format. But especially in college, when it's more team cohesive, you want to be able to put them in the right spots so that way they can run the plays that you set up. Because in college, in university college, like running plays is like the most important thing. That's the focal point of, you know, play-by-play basketball. It's what plays they run and how it's really being pulled off. And you have more versatility in the type of plays you could run when you have players that could do multiple things in multiple positions. So when you subject a player who's like tall, for example, into just a big position where it's very one-dimensional, then you might not be getting the most out of them.
Yeah.
And the best person to figure out, you know, what's right for them is the person that sees them every practice and
observes
that. And that is the coach. So I think Coach Reese was a great coach because I see him use players in many different ways. It wasn't just like, you know, like one man ball. You know, Tay Donald wasn't the only one getting the ball. You know, we saw a lot of players eat during that season last year. And I can only hope for greater things now that, you know, everyone else is trying to carve out a role, and they did good last season, and I think they'll just push it further this season.
Yeah, I think that may bring a great discussion on player versatility, especially nowadays in the modern game. You're seeing it in basketball a lot. You're seeing in hockey too. You're seeing it in other especially team sports too. Is that modern athletic versatility of all these athletes, where they can play multiple positions have multiple roles on their team. I think that speaks, of course, the athletic developments, especially as the calendar flipped past a Y2K into the 21st century. And you saw, you know, I'll take, you know, basketball or hockey, for example, back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, they'd have a really good player, but they'd only enlist them into one single role because that's the only role they're athletically, you know, the best at. But now you're seeing, with the incredible advancements in training and, down in the weight room or out on the pitch, or all these strategies are coming out where they're learning how to, you know, deploy all these players in different roles, and sometimes using, you know, different roles at the same time just to maximize utility out of these players.
Mm-hmm, indeed. And you know what? That's the best thing for the game, because honestly, when you see players doing multiple things on the court, you know, even for the fans, it's a great viewing experience. You know, we see the same players playing the same traditional roles before, and you know, the game is always going to be fun no matter what.
Yeah.
But you know, we love to see a little like a Victor Wembanyama, you know, shooting it from almost half court. It's like, whoa, you know, it's a spectacle. And it even applies for OUA sports. I mean, let's take the women's basketball team, for example. They are relatively undersized. You know, just looking at the roster, you know, we have heights, you know, like pretty much around like 6 foot at most. We see 5'5", 5'7", 5'10", 5'9". So
that's me. I'm 6'10".
See, there you go. We got some 6'10s out here. You know, we got some unorthodox heights around here. But reality, like at most, the tallest player on the women's team is 6'3". Only one person. That's Blossom. So really, it just goes to show that, like, you got to utilize, you know, what you have. And for the women's sport basketball team, they have an undersized team, but they're still able to, you know, compete against teams with, you know, taller women. Because the thing that they focus on is versatility, playing positionless basketball. When you have, like a really tall, player, maybe at like 6'5 or higher on the court, and you have that undersized team, what you could do is, well, you could play zone defense. You could have double teams set up where they have to outlet to a player outside who might not be able to shoot very well. So, you know, that also kind of comes into play where coaching is really important to, you know, work with what you have. But it just goes to show that, like, even if you're a team that isn't playing with a traditionally, you know, a traditional position like play, that you could still work your way around any sort of team, even a team with a significantly taller individual. And our women's basketball team has been doing that, especially last season, and they did it well. They were able to play with an undersized team, and they were able to run great defensive plays that were able to, you know, put them over the top in a lot of games.
Yeah, I know, especially basketball. I know, you know, when I was growing up, I was never really basketball guy. I played basketball for like my elementary school team, but that saying basically I didn't play basketball at all. especially through high school, I never really paid much attention to it. But now I'm university now. I've been on sports team for a couple of years, and I've had, you know, the opportunity to cover some basketball games and pay more attention to them. I've really appreciated basketball over the past couple of years during my university career, especially, I don't know, I like thinking like more, again, I like thinking like a coach, or like thinking more defensively or positionally. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not huge into the stars. I never was when I played sports.
Fair enough.
And so one thing that's really fascinating about both basketball teams, the men's and women's in general, you know, basketball that I've grown to appreciate is just the plays they run and the strategies they employ. Sometimes it seems like, you know, if you're watching basketball and don't know how basketball works, it kind of seems a bit haphazard. Why don't you just pass to that guy? Why don't you just take a shot from there and all this sort of stuff? Why are they double teaming? You know, you don't really understand how different strategies and defensive and offensive strategies work. But when you kind of like tune your mind into, you know, seeking out and paying attention to all these different positions and strategies set up, you know, basketball is almost like turns into a chess match, mm-hmm, of sorts, and who can deploy their strategy and who can, you know, change a strategy on the fly the best.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And, you know, that's the nature of the game. You know, when it comes to, you know, teams that run plays especially really well, you can't predict it. And even if you do, they're always going to find ways to, you know, work around that. You know, that's the best thing about teams that can run plays, because it is beyond just like having a board and X's and O's. It's really about adapting to whatever is in front of you. And the best good coaches have great play setup for their team, but great coaches adjust and they adapt their plays to meet whatever weakness their opposing team has. And I've noticed that even just watching games of some of the best teams, like we saw the Celtics win the championship.
Yeah.
Listen, they didn't win it with just great personnel, no. Although their personnel is very good. They won because they ran great plays and they adapted very well to what their opponent was, you know, going at them with. You know, like, for example, the Mavericks are a decent team, but they're, you know, they're very weak on the outside. Beyond just Luka and Kyrie, they have a lot of players that just go for lobs or go for inside shots. But really, they're very limited in their versatility, very one-dimensional role players. And so the Celtics just saw that and they're like, hey, let's take advantage of that. Let's, you know, force them into positions where they have to take that three-point shot at the last minute of the shot clock. And it's what really led them to their success. And, you know, they also utilize versatile players. Listen, Derek White, for example, is a phenomenal two-way player. Yeah. Porzingis could shoot from outside every time. And he was cooking.
It was great.
Yeah, did you see that game? That was insane. So when he came back from injury, he was shooting lights out from the three-point line. And that was crazy because he's basically a unicorn, as they say, where he is just a seven-footer who's shooting like nothing. And you have those two-way guards like Derek White. And, you know, Drew Holiday is just phenomenal, back-to-back champion out here. Just, it's insane he gets traded to a different team.
I know, right? And still wins.
So, literally, we see versatility everywhere. In, you know, youth sports, we see it in the NBA. And I'm sure it even translates to other sports nowadays. Maybe you could, like, let me know of an example in other sports where versatility seems to become much more prominent.
Definitely. Well, you know, we talked about the Celtics, of course, won the past NBA championship, the past NHL championship, of course, won by the Florida Panthers. And that was a team that I think also exemplified versatility in this modern age of a sporting competition, of course. They had their role players who played their role well,
mm-hmm,
but take someone like, you know, Alexander Barkov, their first-line center, who is perhaps, you know, everyone's been saying he's the most underrated player for the past 10 years, so I don't know if he's really underrated if everyone says he's underrated. But his offensive prowess is exceptional, and, of course, his defensive play was what helped them win that cup. A lot of their forwards during the regular season, it's mostly about, you know, it's about defense. But during the regular season, you know, it's especially in hockey, it's about getting the points, getting the goals. Your forwards are the ones who's scoring. Your defense are the one who's playing defense. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs, of course, you hear all the time, every Stanley Cup playoffs, the playoffs are a different beast. And so you really alter your game to meet that playoff atmosphere. And a lot of the Panthers forwards, you know, you noticed Tkachuk, you noticed Bennett, and especially Barkov, stepped up defensively more than they already were. And they also provided, especially Sam Reinhart too, on the top six of the Panthers, they're providing their signature offense. But when the playoffs came, they gritted down and they really applied their defensive play and became more versatile and more useful, especially on the penalty kill, especially in those defensive draw situations. So I think you'll see that trend, especially as we go forward through the 2020s, is, you know, while there will still be players who are exceptionally good at one or two things, you will see the rise, and you have been probably over the past decade, of the versatility players and the players who are two-way forwards, especially in basketball and hockey, and the ones who can play great defense, the ones who can play great offense, the ones who can take slap shots, snapshots, the ones who can drain it from half court and also grab a quick layup in too. So I think the age of versatility, it has been upon us and will probably continue, especially as these athletic developments continue. Speaking of the NHL, of course, the NHL regular season starts today. It's kicked off. It's a bit of a strange start to the season, of course. They have a regular season game going on right now, and they also have preseason games going on later today.
Ooh, that's going to be fun.
It's a bit strange, but it's fun. And, of course, the regular season, why the regular season, some games are starting today for some teams. Of course, they're kicking it off with the Buffalo Sabres and New Jersey Devils in Prague. Of course, the capital of the Czech Republic. Czechia now, I guess. But yeah, no, they're playing some regular season games overseas, which is always cool to see, you know, especially because a lot of times when they play, you know, NFL runs international games, MLB, NBA, they all run international games. But those are often, excuse me, preseason games or exhibition games or, you know, summer series, showman games. So it's really interesting to see, like, NHL taking that step. And, you know, I think they did it last year, too, with the LA Kings, where they have these international games mean something. And they're in the regular season. These count towards the 82-game regular season. These count towards your points for the playoffs. So I think that's it's interesting, especially as other teams' preseason games are still going on. So it's a bit strange. So you can watch a regular season game, then a preseason game the same day. But of course, yeah, that's the NHL. They have a game on, 1 p.m. So as we're doing the show, their game is on. I'll look up that score a bit later. And then the rest of the teams that aren't playing in Europe, I think it's just the Sabres and Devils in Europe. The rest of the teams, their regular season starts in a couple of days, October the 8th. Bernie, a big hockey guy?
I'm not a big hockey guy. However, I'm definitely interested in getting into it for sure.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, actually, so when it comes to hockey and international competition, how close would you say international competition is compared to, you know, the national level that we have going on with the NHL?
Like international, like, countries?
Like leagues abroad.
Oh, okay. It's hockey. It's I don't say stark contrast, but it's very clearly that, like, the American league, the NHL, you know, the North American league for hockey, the NHL is the best league in the world. But also has to do with, like, hockey, you know, kind of being a Canadian invention and American, you know, promotion of it. So it's kind of natural for that to occur. But of course, you have European leagues that NHL players sometimes leave and go play in. Like, these European leagues aren't bad by all means. You have the KHL, it's probably the second best hockey league in the world. Of course, that's based out of Eastern Europe and into Russia. And then you have the Swedish league, the SHL, and you'll have different leagues like that where sometimes those players will come over to play the NHL and they'll tear it up. But no one really knows them because they're not, like, NHL players.
Exactly, yeah.
And you'll see NHL players and, like, decent NHL players. These aren't superstars, but these are still, like, players with 10, 15-year careers who have been solid players their entire career. They'll go leave and play in the KHL or the SHL or go play in Britain, stuff like that. Especially as hockey, I know, has been trying to promote the sport as, you know, out of the big four, the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. NHL is, you know, fourth. They're last in stuff like, you know, international awareness and brand promotion and revenue drawing and all that stuff. So there is a concentrated effort to try and grow the game. So I think playing regular season games in these in foreign markets is great to grow the game. And it's also great for the international and foreign hockey leagues to be experiencing a bit of a boom right now in terms of skill level, because that'll help to grow the game too, indirectly too.
Exactly. And you know what? I make a great connection with basketball in the sense that, like, although, yes, the NBA is obviously the better league, it's definitely gotten a lot close. We notice, like, even in basketball, we notice a lot of players coming from these Euro leagues, for example, coming into the NBA through the draft. And before, if someone got drafted and they weren't from, you know, a college or university team, People would just assume they're going to be a bust, you know, probably a draft and stash or just like straight up, you know, they'll fall out of the league. But nowadays we see a lot of players being sought after that are specifically in the EuroLeague or any other basketball leagues, or even like Basketball Without Borders, which they've been practicing a lot, making sure they got players from the African continent. And they've found a lot of success through that as well. So like definitely that gap between, you know, international play and a national play is starting to close in, at least in basketball. And I noticed that it seems that that's relatively the same story in hockey.
Yeah, and you can even look at to baseball too, and especially a lot of these, and it's been a thing for a while, of course. You look over the Pacific pond to Japan in baseball. I think Japan's national sport is also baseball. Mm-hmm. America's national pastime is also baseball. And you've seen, you know, a lot of Japanese players, especially over the past like 20, 30 years, going back into the 80s and 90s as, you know, the anti-Japan sentiment left over from the earlier half of the 20th century began to subside. You're seeing a lot of Japanese players come in.
Yeah, I've noticed,
you know,
yeah.
Shohei Ohtani, for example, up, you know, an argument for the GOAT, you know.
Crazy as home run rate. That's insane.
I was talking about it last week. And just to, you know, of course, for, you know, in September, Shohei September, hitting that 50-50 club, that 51-51 club, that 52-52 club, of course. That meaning, of course, it was a big deal when he hit that 50-50 because they say, oh, he joined the 50-50 club. No one's ever joined it before. He was the first one. He founded the 50-50 club of 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases in one season. And you're seeing a great amount of Japanese players over the past, you know, I'd say maybe 30 years. Ichiro Suzuki, you know, the one of my favorites growing up of the Mariners mainly. You're seeing in those Japanese leagues too, where these players come from. These players come to MLB and they start off, you know, they start off on the right foot and they're immediately dominant. Mm-hmm. Like, so these Japanese leagues obviously aren't that far off from the MLB if they can come in and they have the experience from these leagues and they're treating it just like they're at home. Still tearing it up, right?
Yeah.
So I think, especially as, you know, I mean, we're all kind of guilty of it being Canadians and stuff. We pay a lot of attention to the national sports and stuff like that. But there is great competition in international leagues too.
Absolutely. And obviously the biggest, you know, the biggest form of international competition definitely is in soccer, where they got the Champions League going on, where they have a lot of European teams coming in from different European leagues. And then also, you know, we have the World Cup that runs, and just it's absolutely insane how in soccer, like, they have the best form of international competition, as in the sense that they have really strong heavy hitters in all parts of the world. They have the Spanish league is amazing, the England league is amazing. It's just really good. The MLS is not as good, but it's getting pretty close.
It is
now.
Getting, especially over the past couple of years, that they're bringing in a lot more talent from overseas.
Yeah, we got Inter Miami with Messi now. So,
oh man,
you know, they
if he plays a game for them, every time I turn them on, he's not playing. He's resting.
Oh, man. See, but hey. But
when he plays, he scored. I remember last year when he came in, like, he was just dropping like 2 goals a game for like a couple months there. He was still tearing it up.
Yeah, that's impressive, but it's really good for the market. And honestly, like, it just goes to show, like, they, in soccer, like, they're the best sport where they showcase how international competition closes in and gets really competitive. And I really hope that gets modeled in other sports, because I feel like, you know, as like the game is getting more global for any sport nowadays, baseball, hockey, basketball, that we're starting to see, especially with the, you know, advent of social media. And that's honestly what really got it going, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think, you know, hopefully we could see in the future, like, for example, in basketball, I hope, you know, one day the leagues in abroad will be so good that, like, they could just host, like, competitions and cups where it's multiple teams from different leagues just coming together for one competition. So just like how the Champions League is, just like, you know, so I feel like if that starts happening for those other sports, like, it might not happen soon, like right now, but I feel like it's sooner than we think. And I think that'll be super big.
I agree. I think it is sooner than we think. I don't think we're paying enough attention to it as we could. That's a great idea, of course, having all these, you know, international leagues holding competitions. And it's always strange, especially when you see, like, you know, analysts and people online advocate for, like, the national leagues, the NFL, NBA, MLB, and NHL, to, like, they should grow internationally. Like, no, they shouldn't grow internationally. We should let these international leagues grow by themselves to the point where they can collaborate. Because there's been talk, especially there's some talk maybe a couple of years ago, I think some random guy online started it, like the NHL. And they're talking about how hockey, it's big in Canada. It's kind of big in America. And the next countries it's big in is Scandinavia, essentially the Sweden, the Finland, the Denmark, stuff like that. And so they're talking about, oh, NHL should like have like a division in Europe and stuff like that. It's like the logistics of that is pretty painful to try to work out.
Yeah, I could imagine.
And all that. But like these leagues, the KHL, the SHL, barring, you know, the KHL in Russia and, you know, the ongoing social and political issues lying there, these leagues are good. So instead of trying to distill the NHL into more teams and have an international division, you know, we support these leagues as fans and as players too, and get them to the level to where they can collaborate with these American leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's definitely the first thing, because really all this would only happen if it's marketable for, you know, the major leagues that we got going on in North America, right? So it is really up to these international leagues to really step up, market their game really well, and get big enough where they could do these expansions into, you know, having cups and competitions between each other. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And, you know, speaking of markets, I think the biggest, most popping mainstream market going on right now is women's basketball at the WNBA.
Yes.
You know, that absolutely
Caitlin Clark, hey,
literally insane. I literally seen like the numbers for it. It's insane how like the market for WNBA games, like the attendance has been almost pretty much competing with the NBA at this point with the Indiana Fever games. It's literally insane. Like regular season NBA games are not, they need to step up because people are not tuning in enough to regular season NBA games compared to the WNBA
games. Yeah, I know. The Fever's out of the playoffs. I'm still watching.
That's how crazy it is. So it really is impressive how, like, because I remember there was a lot of complaints about how the WNBA was consistently not making profit,
yep,
and they were basically leeching off of the NBA. But it has turned so dramatically now, because I know a lot of people complain, especially about like NBA TV just being a horrible streaming platform,
yes,
to where people are just like pirating and just watching illegally. You know, I'm not going to plug any illegal streams, but you know.
But so they're out there.
They are out there. And it's just like the NBA definitely now has to do better. And the WNBA is succeeding well. And I think the best thing that they've done is they've let the marketing for Caitlin Clark happen. Like,
yes,
they weren't haters about it. Like, I know a lot of WNBA players aren't very fond of Caitlin Clark taking on the spotlight and, you know, making it seem like the league is only about her and she's by far the best. But there's a lot of great players. You know, AJ Wilson's amazing and she won MVP.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, she doesn't get as much. I think she is getting decent recognition, but not as much as Caitlin Clark is. But honestly, I don't hate it because honestly, if it's whatever is helping the WNBA be marketable, go forth and do that. You know, definitely all these, you know, outlets like Bleacher Report, House of Highlights, them promoting Caitlin Clark only benefits the WNBA more and allows for more opportunities for more women in the sport.
Yeah, it's really, especially, you know, I had a train of thought and I just lost it, but it's a really significant flip from last season and the past season. This season, Caitlin Clark's in, and suddenly it's all over social media. Suddenly the ratings are drawing a million watchers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that, especially basketball, I feel, which is, you know, the nature of the sport and the culture around the sport, you know, that they want their superstars. You want your marketability,
mm-hmm,
right? You want the brand deals. You want the social media, you know, algorithm and influencers to appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other sports, you know, don't really have that superstar quality, but basketball does. And the fact that the WNBA has leaned into it, mm-hmm, and helped promote it has only done wonders for the league. And even since, you know, WNBA has been around, I think, since the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they've never had the attention they've had until right now. We're living right through it.
Yeah.
Which is great to see. And you talk about other women's leagues. PWHL, of course, the women's NHL that started up last year. Last year was a bit of a strange season for their inaugural season, of course. The famous or infamous no names. You know, they were PWHL Toronto. They had no team names. It wasn't like the Toronto Maple Leafs. It was just Toronto.
Really? Wow.
PWHL Toronto, PWHL Ottawa. So they finally got names, and I forget the names now. But so they finally got names, finally got like cool jerseys on it. So that league also did really well. Like, not WNBA, you know, TV ratings well, but they did shockingly well for their first season.
Yeah, that's
and
really
now
cool.
Only with now with their branding and their marketing and their team names finally kicking off at start of the second season, I think they'll only go up. And there's always, you know, always been that bit of, you know, genderism, I guess, between like women's and men's,
of course,
sports. And so it's great to see that that's falling now, and we're seeing that like the quality of the play isn't that far off.
Exactly. And honestly, like, I think what that WNBA you know, advent really goes to show is that what you need most importantly to make the game marketable is narrative and storyline. I think That is really what sets it apart. Because honestly, like,
great point.
Before she came to the league, people were convinced it was a genderism issue. But I mean, even people that might have had initial aside on that take.
Yeah.
Well, now they're the ones tuning in. So really, it's beyond that now. It's honestly more of just like, can you make the game interesting? Can people follow it? So, you know, the most important thing is you're marketing to casual fans, people, yep. Because most people, you know, they don't have time. They got stuff going on in their life. And so they're only able to tune in to, you know, every few important games, or they'll see what's on social media. So if there's a storyline associated with it, like how Caitlin Clark was supposed to take the league by storm and she could shoot lights out,
yep.
You know, and then the rest of it builds off of that. Now, any player that comes in her way is like, opposing that, you know, like, oh, can AJ Wilson, this matchup, yeah. Could she take down the Caitlin Clark, you know, train ride where everyone's just hopping on the bandwagon, and will she like take her by sort? Like, it's just, you create a storyline and people want to tune in because now they're going to watch the game just to see, can I, like, the haters are going to tune in to
exactly. Caitlin
Clark and the supporters. So I think if, like, you know, even in women's hockey, like, if they could do that too, I think that'd be really cool. And just goes for all the sports that want to put themselves out there, especially with that social media age.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, especially as you mentioned the rapid, you know, digitization of the world and how everyone's always glued to their phones and stuff like that. I think, yeah, that you make a terrific point. Someone should hire you for marketing because it's narrative and storylines that build attractions, that build TV ratings, that build social media engagements. Mm-hmm. It's the narrative and it's the story. You can have the highest quality or the lowest quality, competition, but if you have that, you know, that draw, that thing that makes people want to tune in. You know, you've seen that a lot in a lot of sports. NHL has kind of struggled with that a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, they haven't really marketed their superstars. It's superstars. Connor McDavid came in. That was pretty cool. But he's been in the league for almost 8, 9, 10 years now. Mm-hmm. So his aura, while he's still the greatest player in the league, this is kind of the aura of seeing McDavid has kind of fallen. They're trying a bit with Connor Bedard, the most last year's number one draft pick, but he's on Chicago and no one watches Chicago games. The team's not very good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they don't have that draw or that, you know, that it factor that'll bring people into the games. You see that narrative story, you know, professional wrestling, WWE, AEW, where, you know, they have really high quality wrestling, don't have that narrative storylines to bring new viewers in. You see that, you know, NBA again, and now WNBA have probably been the two, and NFL too, some of the better leagues at marketing their players. You know, NFL, you may not watch any of the games, but you know, like, who the star quarterbacks are. Mm-hmm. Or you know Patrick Mahomes, you know Jake Allen and all those, right?
Exactly.
So those sports and those leagues have been great at leaning into it and paying attention to what the fans want, paying attention to creating these narratives, these storylines, and promoting the superstars to where people who support them want to tune in and people who want to see them stopped tune in.
That's what we need. And honestly, even like in soccer, for example, like we talk about, you know, like before it was the battle of Ronaldo and Messi.
Exactly.
And honestly, they managed to even build off of that. Now they have, you know, the Mbappe matchups. Who is he facing up against? You know, they market Haaland really well because he came into the Premier League and everyone was like, oh, he wouldn't be able to adjust.
And
to
boom.
The
Premier
League. And he did easily. So it really, like, it's really, you know, I see basketball and soccer. I think those are the best at like pushing the narrative for sure. And some people could argue, especially those that are very like tuned in to like the intricacies of these sports, they might hate on it and be like, oh, it just makes the sport so like bland and simple and like it doesn't really highlight the depth and the appreciation for the game.
Yeah.
And I, like, as someone who's very, you know, intricate on the numbers and stuff, like I understand, but like we got to admit, like, if it weren't for the casual fans and if it weren't for, you know, the casual appreciation for the game, then we wouldn't even have the expert analysis and stuff because there wouldn't be a platform for them, you know?
Yeah, it's key to try to draw in fans who were casually watching a product or weren't watching your product. That's who you want to draw.
Exactly.
You don't want, like, again, you have those hardcore fans that no matter what you put out on them, they're going to watch.
Yeah, but it's exactly that, though, because no matter what you put out, they are going to still watch.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that, but it's just the casual fans.
That's what you want to draw in. So these, again, these promotions and this marketing, these storylines, that's... it's targeted at casual fans. So again, you see all these guys, more, you know, this hardcore fans, the ultras in Europe and stuff like that, who they're complaining about everything left, right, and center because the game's not what it was today.
But it's
or
like,
not what it was back then. But like, you're still watching, and that's not who it's for.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks for your input. Cool. You're still going to watch, and we're not trying to attract you. We're not trying to cater to what you want to see in the product. we need to expand our game, you know, for business reasons, to revenue, profit, and stuff like that. But also for, you know, players and player associations want to expand the game too, because then they get higher salaries, they get more players, and, you know, it's a union thing, right? Mm-hmm. There's multiple reasons to try and expand the game, and trying to, you know, cater to your hardcore audience isn't what's going to expand the game.
Exactly. And honestly, anyone that complains that, oh, it's not how it used to be, like, come on. Let's be honest. They were doing the same stuff. They didn't have social media, but they certainly were marketing the game a similar way. Like, even, like, I could remember, like, you know, doing some research on, you know, the 90s and, you know, Jordan. And when he came to the league, well, guess what? They were marketing him, too. They were marketing him as the GOAT.
Jordan was on every single magazine cover for the entirety of the Bulls run.
There you go. And even, like, everyone he faced, it was the narrative. Can they take down MJ and the Dynasty Bulls? That is the narrative that they set. And you see the drama, the antics, like when the Pistons were facing Jordan and the Bulls. And what they did, they just beat him up on the court. Literally, and that was primetime television. Not the game playing how it was, but the drama associated with it. That's what marketed it, and that's what made Jordan an international icon, expanded it the game internationally to appeal to everyone because of the narrative associated with it. Because, listen, good basketball is good basketball, but it's always been that way. It's always been, even before social media, they would just put it on TV, put it on the radio, you know, Jordan... the GOAT, you know, that's what they would say. And it's whoever could take him down, you know. So it's nothing new. And I'm sure you could even speak to how it applies in other sports even before, how they would advertise it and market it the same way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the concept of marketing your biggest stars has always been a thing. It's just that older fans just, I guess, like those older stars more. So these younger stars getting marketed on social media. And these younger stars, you know, they have a bit of swagger to them. They have a bit of attitude to them. They've got, you know, that superstar quality that makes you want to see what they're saying. So these old heads are just like, you know, back in my day, just, you know, it's like, stop talking. Uh-huh. Again, I lost my train of thought too. But I think, it's that drama. And that's what I would say. It's a drama that hooks people in. You know, again, good sport and competition is good, especially like when it's your favorite sport and stuff like that. Like, I'm a big hockey guy. I'm a big lacrosse guy too. Mm-hmm. I played both those sports. I understand the sport. So I like just seeing really good quality matches of those games. But like, I'm a casual fan of basketball. I'm a casual fan of football, of baseball, of soccer. So you've got to hook me in somehow, because not everyone's going to be a hardcore fan of every sport.
Exactly.
But they still like competitive sports competition. So how do you hook those fans in? Mm-hmm. Well, it's that drama, it's that marketing, it's that pathos that you feel towards these players.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of bringing people into the competition and the antics of sports, let's talk about the antics of the Olympics.
Because hey,
let me tell you, there was a lot that we could talk about with the Olympics. So I don't know what comes to mind when you think of the Olympics that happened as of recent.
I think it was a funny moment. I think that Olympics, that was a good moment. I think Paris, I mean... you know, it's a good city, the city of romance, of course, in the heart of France.
As they
I think was the river there was like too overflowed with pollution.
Yeah, apparently. I was just thinking of that, like, wow, the city of romance, huh? Very romantic.
It just inspires just so much.
Oh my goodness.
Positive feelings in it for France. Of course, we were before we went on, we were talking about the breaking. How that was a new sport in the Paris Olympics. It will probably be the end of that sport.
So sad. I really hope it doesn't end up being that way.
It was actually kind of cool. I remember, like, I came home from work during the summer, and, like, I just threw it on, and, like, breaking happened to be on. Mm-hmm. So I sat back on the couch and watched it. And, like, it was actually entertaining. Mm. And then I turned it off and went about my day. The next day, I turned on social media, and it's just kangaroo on my screen. And I'm like, what's going on here?
It turns out, oh, that's Ashley Ray Gunn. Oh, my goodness.
Yo.
Like, wow. Honestly, her being in that sport was really unfortunate. I just hear a bunch of things, but apparently, like, you know, the way she got into it and stuff, and, like, you know, she had connections and stuff to get her up there on that Olympic stage. Now I've seen other videos of her breakdancing. She's not bad.
No.
But like, I think she was trying to be innovative or like be different, because I don't know. In any case, we could all agree she did not cook. She did not cook. Not at all.
She left a lot of crumbs.
Lots of crumbs.
In fact, there's nothing eaten. Oh, in fact, the sand was still there.
Still there.
No one touched it. Still on the plate. It's grown mold in the back.
Oh,
no
my
one
God.
Has not cooked as much as that. Lady, yeah, I've seen other clips of her. Yeah, the breaking's fine. And I don't really understand, like, Then we get the discussion of like what should and should not be Olympic sports, which I think is interesting. Should breaking be an Olympic sport? Traditionally, I would say no, but I also understand that like the Olympics, it's an old institution, and you know, year over year, it seems like the ratings are dropping. Not a lot of people are tuning into it.
Mm-hmm.
So if breaking was something their like department came up with to like try to grow the Olympics and maintain its relevancy among youth, I can support it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of like me being a traditional sports fan, it's an interesting inclusion.
That's fair. Honestly, I guess it really boils down to what do we consider a sport? There are so many sports nowadays, like, you know, people consider esports as sports.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, like for me, what is a sport is a competition that is with two opposing sides. Whatever the metric of the score is, it's whoever has the best wins. And I feel like the best athletes of a sport should be someone who specializes in something of any aspect where the average person couldn't just pick up and, you know, compete against in the same way. So in my, from my perspective, that's the definition of a sport. So that makes it very broad. That means breakdancing could very well be a sport. And I know when we think of sports, we think of, you know, athletic people in terms of like, oh, they're physically athletic, like they have physical gifts. But we see athletes come in many different forms, even in the traditional sports that we have. You know, a basketball player isn't going to be built the same as a soccer player.
No.
That's the truth. And in the same sense, you know, we could even push it broadly with like how, you know, people that do esports are obviously not going to be built the same way someone who does any other sport.
Controversial take.
But which is why some people believe esports is not a sport at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair. Although I'm going to go against the grain.
Yeah.
I'll say like breakdancing, esports, or any other forms are actually still sports. And
do you consider esports breaking as sports?
I think esports is a sport.
Breaking, okay.
I think breaking is a sport. And I know you disagree.
Should it be a sport that's competed at the Olympics?
At the Olympics, see, now that's interesting.
Do you think, because I know it's been conversation online too, every Olympics, every four-year or two-year cycle. Mm-hmm. Do you think like esports should be in the Olympics?
So when it comes to whether a sport should be in the Olympics, that's a separate conversation, which I'll definitely have because I think that's so important, you know?
Yeah.
Because we're seeing, you know, the Olympics starting to turn into, you know, like where we hold events of different aspect, different diversity, where we want to bring in different cultures of different sports into the mix. Breaking, I think breaking should be continued in the Olympics because I think breaking is like a hobby and it's a tradition that's exercised in a lot of different regions of the world. I think breaking is very popular in different parts of the world, and the best thing you could do is bring different parts of the world together. And if breaking is the medium for that, then I think it should be something that should be, you know, continued in the Olympics. And obviously with Ray Gunn, it's really made it look more of a joke. Like, why do we have this sport on here? But
yeah, she single-handedly removed a sport from the Olympics, which is hell of a legacy.
Yeah, that is one way to, you know, leave your mark. But I do think outside of her, like there were some really good showcasings by a lot of the athletes of that sport. And I feel like if we can really highlight the best of the best in that sport, then it's going to bring viewers together because I think breaking is cool. I mean, they even had skateboarding too as a sport.
Yeah,
right?
I agree. And like, again, I just throw on the TV and see it. I come breaking. I think I saw skateboarding too.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was good competition. It was entertaining.
Yeah.
So I do agree that like, you know, again, I've never broke dance before.
Me neither.
But like, I do think it's interesting and I think that it deserves a second chance in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And then it comes back to the concept of a sport and you say how sport is like, it's two sides.
Yeah.
It's a competition.
Yeah.
And how esports are sports. See, I'm gonna argue with this in this one. That's good. Esports aren't sports.
Okay, so what is the case?
I think, it's personal my definition. I think for a sport, to be considered like a sport, I think there has to be some sort of athletic demand or toll, stuff like that. And so you kind of get into like, oh, you know, the more it was bowling a sport, is golf this kind of weird, iffy sports and stuff like that. I consider them both sports.
Okay.
But I think like with like esports, I know especially, again, I might be in the minority on this because a lot of people are embracing esports as a...
Especially nowadays, yeah.
Yeah, and I do think it's a legitimate competition.
That's fair.
I you know, it's esports. It already has a sports, you know, suffix in it.
Do you think
it
deserves that suffix?
I think it does.
Okay.
I think like, you know, I think it's... Esports aren't a sport. Esports are esport. Electronic sport.
Electronic sport.
So, like, I think that distinction is important because most athletically, like, demanding thing you do in esport is like your thumb reaction time, right? Whereas like, does that deserve to be under the same umbrella as like, you know, bigger competition like football, like soccer, like basketball, like hockey, which are all 1,000 times more physically demanding? I would say esports needs to have that E prefix.
Okay.
In front of it.
Interesting. I do feel like, honestly, the take on, like, you know, how it must have physical exertion and there should be some.
And people disagree with that because that's my personal definition, right?
And that's fair. That's fair. What I will say is that I'd say that's not less of a deterrent on esports and more of an appreciation for those sports in general, because I think really cool that, like, you know, there are sports where you can put your body to the limit and, you know, you can see how far the human body can really, you know, push itself. I think that's really cool. But I still don't think that takes away from what esports is as a whole. And the fact that I feel like at the end of the day, it is, you know, people putting their, because, you know, I can play video games. I play FIFA. You know, it's a fun game.
Oh, yeah. But I play video games.
But when I play, you know, online competition and I get like lower in the divisions to like the more competitive divisions, I'm like, wow, when I thought I was really good at the game, there's someone better, you know? And that's the appreciation I have for esports, is that it's people playing those games to the limit of the game, like what it's capable of.
Fair point.
And we talk about the human limit with these sports, but what about the human limit when you're put with the platform of a game? Like, how far can, like, even speed running and stuff, like, you know, it's just like, how far can you push it? And I think that's the best concept you can have with sports. When you have sports, you're putting the best of that specific medium on the stage for everyone to see, and people are just tuning in to see how far can it be pushed. And I think that's the basis of sports, and I think esports still pulls it off, because when you have a game, you want to see like how well are they playing it compared to the best players. I know this person's really good at the game, but how are they compared to this other person who's just as good as they say, and who's the best between that? And when you see that being pushed, it still requires a lot of mental skill. And mental skill, I think, you know, there's a lot of gymnastics that go along with, you know, how you play games. And it may seem like a joke because it's just whatever is on a screen, but, you know, I'm sure you play video games as well. Then, you know, you understand and have an appreciation.
I think that's actually a point I'm concerned. I'm not going to go back on it, but I do actually agree. Well, I do appreciate the sense that, like, sports are pushing whatever you are doing to the brink.
Exactly.
And I think pushing the limit. I think that's a good definition of sport, too. Mm-hmm. Of you know, no matter what you're doing, are you challenging the medium you're doing yourself? Are you pushing it to the limit? Are you doing it to the maximum skill that you can? I think that is an interesting point I have never really considered.
Something to think about. Obviously, you can still have your definition for sport, but
I think that's
good.
It
definitely kind of puts it into perspective. And then also, obviously, the marketing aspect. You know, you're not going to have organized sport at the highest level and try to market it and no one wants to watch it, because then there's no point of labeling it as a sport, because marketing is really important.
Yeah.
Because we're organizing it and it costs money to set it up, right? So the real question is breakdancing sustainable in terms of profits. I think it still needs some time to build that up to the Olympic level, but I mean, they host competitions within, you know, localities, and I feel like if there's already hype building up, even if it's bad hype, good hype from Raygun, well, now we actually have people's eyes set on breakdancing.
True. Arguably, no one would be like, not as many people would be aware of it as they are now if it wasn't for her terrific deployment of the talent.
So if America runs a Olympics, and I heard they might even bring back breakdancing potentially, then like they could bring it back, and guess what? People are actually going to watch now, because
now they're used to it. Now they want to see what's going to happen next.
Is there going to be another Raygun, or is it? And just like that, now you have the platform, now you have the market. Just like that, it really fits the definition of a sport really well. And then esports, we know that's been growing really exponentially, and in different aspects. And, like, you know, that's already building up. I've even seen, like, for the 2K League, they even have a whole draft they set up. Like, it's an actual NBA draft. It's insane. It's pretty funny, because it's like, no way these men that probably sit on their chair and stuff and play a game are getting drafted. But, it just shows that there, as long as the market is there, then the sport can be there.
That's a good point. And you talk about, again, esports, and there's a lot of money in it now, especially, I think, you know, what kicked it off, I think, was especially like back, you know, 4 years ago, you're in COVID, you're in the pandemic, everyone's locked down. What do? You play video games the entire time, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, for as, you know, unfortunate and as controversial as that era was, I think esports kind of liked it in the sense that, you know, it drew more attention than they ever have to the games they're playing. And naturally, you're playing a video game, you kind of get good at it, you become interested in it, become invested in the game you're playing. Oh, let's check out the competitive scene for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So coming out of the pandemic, there's a lot of money, a lot of events being held internationally with like sold out crowds in these stadiums and these theaters where people are going to watch these esports being played.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty prominent.
Yeah, so I think that especially as this decade goes on, esports will only become more popular.
Mm.
Now the question is for you, should esports be played at the Olympics?
Oh, honestly, there's so much hype nowadays, especially internationally, that like competitions are held everywhere in the world for different sports or for different games. The real question is, like, if esports were to be in the Olympics, what games would we play? That's the thing. There's so many games that it's way too broad to put.
Rocket League.
Rocket League. Hey, Rocket League is not too bad. So that's the only thing. The only thing for me stopping esports from being in the Olympics is the games that would be.
That is, that's a good point. Yeah, so which many. Like games would you choose to play? They're all, the games are like intellectual property too.
Exactly.
Do the companies who own the game, like, will they get paid for it being featured in Olympics? Do they have to pay for their spot in the Olympics?
Exactly.
That's an interesting conversation you might have to have another time as we wind down on Golden Bolt here on RadioLaurie.com. Just to recap for you guys, as you guys are maybe still listening after an exciting 55 minutes or so. Of course, tonight, I've got the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks men's hockey team, their home opener against the Western Mustangs tonight at 7 p.m. At the Waterloo Memorial Recreational Complex. You can get your tickets in person or online. Our own Mateo Beckles will be calling that action.
Legend.
Oh, I love Mateo. of course, the men's football team plays tomorrow. Of course, they're also at home, University Stadium. That's a stadium down the road a bit from campus there versus the 8th nationally ranked Queens. Of course, Laurier, numero uno. And that's a senior day tomorrow, too, celebrating the seniors on that football team. Of course, NHL season starts today. There's a game going on right now in Prague, the capital of Czech Republic, between the Devils and Sabres. There's some preseason action also tonight, starting at the regular time of around 7 p.m. Eastern. And of course, the NHL regular season starts next week. The back to campus sports, of course, women's hockey. Their home opener is October 11th. And both basketball teams, women's and men's basketball teams, will start their season as the calendar flips to November, but you can still catch their preseason action at home at the Athletic Complex Gym. Bernie, any last thoughts you want to mention? Anything you want to promote? You work for The Court. You can promote The Court.
Yeah, so I work for The Court as a lead sports editor. So the October issue just came out. You can pick up your October issue around campus for the physical newspaper, or you could even check online at issu.com. Where they hold all the newspaper archives, and we do have the October edition as well as the other previous editions. And if you tune into the last page of the sports section, which I'm in charge of, you will see I have three articles and one from Madeline about the Battle of Waterloo soccer matchups that happened last month. So take a look. Hopefully you guys read up on that. And yeah, that should be it for me.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. You can also catch this on repeat later on the RadioLaurie.com. So if you want to caught some of it or you want to listen later to our incredibly insightful discussion, that you can just click on to RadioLaurie.com and have all these episodes on demand. But for Bernavan, my name's Ian. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great rest of your Friday and a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
See ya.